It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around.
This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
What I have found is that courts are very reluctant to speak with the children. They're even more reluctant to have the children be put on the stand to indicate a preference. A guardian ad litem cannot come into court with hearsay, but a guardian ad litem can state to the court the child's preference. It's one of the things that they are required to consider and provide evidence for the court.
Private attorney Mary Berkey Owens explained child custody litigation and how these cases get decided. And in our weekly question and answer session, we'll find out when you might be able to get spousal support or alimony and when it's too late. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. This show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR, 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR.
Ain't gonna let injustice turn me around, turn me around, no, turn me around. Ain't gonna let injustice turn me around.
And now, this week's news you can use. Due to the struggling economy, food stamp use continues to increase. Originally issued on paper coupons and now issued on a debit card, food stamps seldom pay the entire cost of food for a household, but instead supplement the food budget. However, with the skyrocketing cost of food, gasoline, and other essentials, more and more families are looking to food stamps to make ends meet. The Virginia State Department of Social Services says there's been a 6.2% increase in participation from June 2007 to June 2008, with some localities showing increases greater than 20%. Food stamp benefits vary by household size and income. Maximum benefits are $162 per month for a household of one and $542 for a household of four. As they do every October 1st, food stamp allotments will be increasing, and this year's increase of 8.5% is the largest in over two decades. In other news, school fees continue to be examined after Roanoke County school officials announced this spring that it has dropped or reduced most of its school fees for the upcoming year. Fees for materials and services that are required for students to benefit from instruction during the school day are, and always have been, illegal. Despite this, a recent statewide survey by the Virginia Department of Education found that 64 out of 83 school divisions who responded to the survey charged such fees. Only 20 reported having a policy for students and families with financial hardship, and only 9 answered that they informed parents of that policy. The Virginia Constitution guarantees a free public education and only allows fees that are non-academic or involved with optional activities. Despite the survey, the Virginia Department of Education has not taken statewide action on academic fees. With this week's news you can use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright.
Turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Gonna let discrimination turn me around. I'm gonna keep on a walking, keep on a talking, marching up to freedom land.
You're You're listening to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio.
This week's legal term of the week is guardian ad litem. A guardian ad litem is an attorney appointed by a court to look out for and protect the interest of a person under a legal disability during a civil court case. Legal disability refers to a person who is in jail or prison, under the age of 18, on active military duty, in a mental hospital, or found by a court to legally not be of sound mind. Sometimes the fees for the guardian ad litem are paid by the court, but usually the person filing the case pays the guardian ad litem fees. Once the court case is ended by a final order, the attorney no longer serves as guardian ad litem. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I'm Diane Dussault, and that's this week's legal term of the week.
It's time for our weekly question and answer session, and we're here in the studio with this week's questioner. Please tell us your name and where you're from.
My name is Barbara. I'm from Richmond, Virginia. I just wanted to know about spousal support. My husband and I was divorced in 1991, but I didn't pursue it. I didn't think that. I won't even think it. But I was wondering whether it was too late that I could get some support out of him.
Let me ask you a few questions before I try to answer it. How long had you been married?
17 years.
And what year did you separate?
In 1989.
And did he file the divorce or did you file the divorce?
He did.
I assume he had a lawyer when he filed the divorce?
Yeah, he did.
Did you have a lawyer in response to his divorce?
No.
Your assumption that it is too late to file for spousal support is indeed correct. You were married for 17 years, and that is a goodly long time, and that would be taken into account by a court in deciding whether to award spousal support. And generally, the longer the marriage and the more at a disadvantage the marriage put you, financially or otherwise, the stronger your case for spousal support. Now, when people separate and they're married to each other, either of them can go to the local juvenile and domestic relations court, to the court services unit, on your own, by yourself, without an attorney, and file a petition for spousal support. There is not even a court filing fee to do that. And people can and do represent themselves in the juvenile and domestic relations court, not only on petitions for spousal support or alimony, but also petitions for child support, as well as child custody, child visitation. But having not done that, when your husband filed for the divorce in the circuit court, probably a year or two after you separated, then it was your duty to answer his complaint for divorce in writing, which you can do by yourself, but it's very difficult, and really you need an attorney to do that. And if you don't ask for spousal support as an answer to the divorce, or if you don't ask that the issue of spousal support be kept or reserved for a later order after the divorce has been granted, if you don't do one of those two things in the divorce case, then you lose the right to spousal support forever. So you unfortunately did lose your right to spousal support when the divorce was granted in 1991. Hopefully your experience will serve as instructions to others who may not let the same thing happen to them.
That's what I think.
Okay, thank you very much for being on the show. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 Richmond Independent Radio. And we're here with Mary Berkey Owens at the law firm of Owen and Owens in Chesterfield County, Virginia. Mary is a 22-year veteran of family law, and that's what she practices exclusively in Chesterfield County and the greater Richmond area. We're here talking about child custody. Thank you for being on the show, Mary.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with a question about what happens if there is no child custody order at all. Who has the right to custody of a child in that situation?
Both parents are the natural custodial parents of a child, and both parents are the legal guardians of a child. So both parents have rights to that child until a court orders otherwise.
So how does child custody get ordered? Take us through that process. Where do you start? What happens next?
Well, you have two venues to proceed with on a child custody matter. If it's part of a divorce, you can go through the circuit court in the jurisdiction where you last lived together as husband and wife, or where the defendant in that case lives, or you can proceed through the juvenile court where the child resides.
And where is it usually filed? Is it usually filed in circuit court as part of a divorce or in the juvenile and domestic relations court?
I would say about 50% of the time in each court. So the juvenile court, if the decision rendered in the juvenile court is not an acceptable decision, then it can be appealed to a trial de novo in the circuit court. So the circuit court is basically the ultimate authority on custody and visitation matters, except for, of course, appeals to the Court of Appeals.
Okay, so let's start with the Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court. Let's assume somebody has filed for child custody. What information are they going to need to file, and what happens after they do file?
Generally speaking, you go through the juvenile probation department of the particular court. In my case, it would be in Chesterfield County, and you would file a petition for custody. That petition contains certain information about where you live, where the defendant resides, where the child resides, full names of the parties, addresses, social security numbers. The matter is then set for a hearing, and the defendant would be served with that petition for custody. A hearing date would be set, and then the court would hear the matter if the parties cannot reach a decision amongst themselves or through mediation prior to the hearing.
Okay, so what usually happens at that first hearing? I assume that's not the final hearing, that's just the first or preliminary hearing.
You're correct. Generally, the first hearing decides how much time will be needed in order to try the matter, whether or not a guardian ad litem would be appropriate to represent the child. A guardian ad litem is an independent attorney that may be chosen by the court to represent the best interest of the child in the custody or visitation proceeding. The case is then set for a later hearing date, and the matter is tried at that later hearing date.
And what is the guardian ad litem supposed to do after he or she gets appointed to represent the interests of the child?
Well, the guardian can make decisions based upon what they believe to be in the best interest of the child in terms of whether to visit with the child, whether or not to visit with the child with both parents individually, whether to visit the child at school, whether to see the child in his or her office, whether or not to visit the child, talking with school officials, doctors, therapists, social workers. A guardian's job is to represent the best interest of the child, and they are supposed to do that according to standards that have been set by the Virginia Supreme Court.
It sounds like those standards give them a great deal of discretion and leeway as to what to do.
Yes, they do, and they actually govern what they need to do as well to protect and represent the best interest of the child.
Now, I understand in Virginia, at the first hearing, the parties will be ordered, if they've not participated in it before, to go to parent education classes. Would you tell us about those?
Yes, the courts have gone to a law that was mandated by, I believe, the legislature several years ago, where at the initial calling of a case, they are ordered to enter into a co-parenting class. I know specifically through Chesterfield and Henrico, they go to a co-parenting class, and I believe Richmond as well. It's a great opportunity for parents to sit down and learn to communicate with one another. In a lot of jurisdictions, if they do not attend and successfully complete that course, then they will not be allowed to go forward with their motion in court regarding custody or visitation, the party that failed to complete the course.
So I assume most of your clients do go through that course. Do you get any reaction from them as to how valuable it might be?
Actually, yes. Some of the people that I thought would not be successful have learned to communicate much better with their ex-significant other and do a much better job of co-parenting their child. So I think it's a very fruitful and useful program, and I'm delighted that the courts have mandated that as well.
That's great to hear. I've heard similar things from other family law attorneys, and you just, you know, confirmed a lot of what I've heard in the past. Well, once the case comes to trial, after the guardian ad litem has done his or her work, after the parties have done the parenting class, how does the judge decide who gets custody?
Well, the judge must look at a series of factors under Virginia Code Section 20-124.3. And there are a series of factors that the court must consider in order to make a decision regarding custody and visitation. They have to look at certain factors. I believe that there are 11 factors the court considers. It's the age, physical, mental condition of the child, the parties, the relationship between the child and the parties, needs of the child, role the parents have played in the child's life, the willingness of the parties to cooperate, which is where the co-parenting comes into play. The court also looks at the reasonable preference of the child if the child is of an age to be and of sufficient understanding to have such an ability to have a preference. So there are a lot of factors that go into it when the court makes a decision about custody and visitation.
And in your experience, what two or three factors do you think that carry the most weight with the judge in making a decision like this?
I would say the relationship between each parent and the child, that's a really important factor. I don't believe that the age of the child is really an important factor. I think it's the relationship and the needs of the child. And I think in looking at those two factors, the court can look at the past history, look at what's going on currently, if the child is thriving or not, and generally speaking, make a fairly good decision about what's in the best interest of the child.
Now, you mentioned earlier that the judge may, but doesn't have to, take into account the reasonable preferences of the child. How does the judge take that into account? Are there certain age criteria that the judge looks to in terms of, you know, talking to the child or discerning the child's reasonable preferences? How does that work?
I have found that parents typically think that 12 is the magic age. There is no such magic age in the code. But for whatever reason, that's the age that people tend to think their children have an opinion that's worthy of being heard regarding custody and visitation matters. What I have found is that courts are very reluctant to speak with the children. They're even more reluctant to have the children be put on the stand to indicate a preference. A guardian ad litem cannot come into court with hearsay, but a guardian ad litem can state to the court the child's preference. It's one of the things that they are required to consider and provide evidence for the court. So what you're left with is the guardian ad litem, if there is one that's used, bringing that evidence in before the judge or bringing the child into the court. The judge can talk with the child in chambers. Oftentimes they will do that if they believe that the child is of an age where he or she has the ability and understanding to have a preference. And judges often will even talk with the children in chambers if they feel the children are young but may have some valuable information to add to the case. Most of the attorneys I know are reluctant to put the children on the stand to testify, and I think that is a reasonable approach. You really do not want to drag the children into the middle of a custody and visitation matter any more than they already are being dragged into it by virtue of the litigation.
And because there might be a guardian ad litem, their interests are protected that way as well.
Yes, that's the approach that we like to take, and if there's going to be a difficult or controversial case, I always try to ask for a guardian ad litem to protect the child and keep the child out of the fray any more than necessary.
Okay, now let's assume that the judge has decided upon custody. How does the judge then decide the other half of the case, which would be visitation to the parent who doesn't get custody?
Well, actually, the same factors are used by the court to consider visitation as are used for custody. The judge looks at what's in that child's best interest in terms of sharing parenting time between the parents to make a decision about visitation. I believe that the judges look at the transition between school and non-school time to make a decision. They look at the child, whether the child has any learning disabilities. But I have found that courts are trying more to share time with parents and give parents an equal opportunity to spend quality time with their children. But they are also trying to balance a child going back and forth too much because that can be instability for the child.
Sounds like a very difficult balancing act to make. Can a parent be kept from a child completely?
If that parent is harmful to the child, whether it be emotional or physical abuse or neglect, then yes, a parent can be kept from a child completely.
Now, you mentioned earlier appealing a case from the Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court to the Circuit Court. Can you explain that process briefly? And, is the Circuit Court judge likely to differ from what the Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court judge has already done?
Well, anything that is appealed from the juvenile court to the circuit court is a trial de novo, and that actually means a new trial. So it's as if the matter has never been tried when it comes before the circuit court. While you and I both practically know that paperwork certainly has to change hands between the courthouses, the judges do not use that as a guide to make a decision. They actually hear the case as if it's never been tried before and it is a new trial on the evidence. So you cannot assume that a judge will do what a juvenile judge did. You have to act as if it's a new trial because in fact it is.
And in your experience, roughly how often will the circuit court judge differ from what the Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court did?
That's hard to say, Martin. I would have to say that most often the circuit court judges do something similar to what the juvenile court did, unless the evidence has changed by the time that it is tried in the circuit court. I found few variations in the appeals that I have represented people in, and honestly believe that, again, this is due to the fact that we do have some really great family law judges. And I think that they make very good decisions as a whole.
So what happened in the Juvenile Domestic Relations Court is a pretty good preview, not necessarily totally accurate, but a pretty good preview of what's going to happen in circuit court.
I think unless the evidence has changed substantially, then yes, generally speaking, you're going to find a fairly similar result at the circuit court level.
Well, you mentioned change, and I guess that leads probably to my final question, which is, can a child custody order be changed? And if so, what's the process and the rules for doing that?
Absolutely. For any child matters, custody, visitation, or support, all the orders can be changed based upon a material change in circumstances. With regard to custody and visitation, it has to be not only a material change in circumstances, but the burden of proof also must exist that it benefits the child to make that change. So that you can't just decide, okay, my son is now 12 years old, he wants to spend more time with me, I'm going to file a motion to amend and move forward. You've got to show a material change in circumstances and that the child's best interest would be benefited by changing the existing court order. So a lot of times I think people need to really consider the factors before they move forward in the court system with a change of circumstances case.
Well, and based on this interview, I'm hopeful that people will know what those factors are. Thank you very much for talking with us today. We've been talking with Mary Berkey Owens at the law firm of Owen and Owens in Chesterfield County. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
This week's top three tips are about child support. The first tip is that a parent who doesn't have physical possession of a child has a duty to pay child support. The second tip is that child support can be set through either the Division of Child Support Enforcement or the Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court. A petition for child support can be filed at either place on your own, by yourself, without an attorney. The third tip is that once child support has been ordered and not paid on time, it becomes a judgment. You can't go back and undo, set aside, or change the amount of child support that was ordered and was not paid on time. For the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, I am Michelle King, and for this week, that's our top three tips.
That's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. to see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m., and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. Also, if you have a question you would like answered or any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. Please include your name and phone number. You also can leave that same information before 8 a.m. or after 6 p.m. by calling 200-6045. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Almost 125,000 Virginians still have not filed the needed forms to receive their economic stimulus payments or tax rebates from the federal government. Time is running out. The deadline is October 15th. 5 weeks from today. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when our guests, Roxanne Grossman and Paul Harrison from the Community Tax Law Project, talk about tax law you can't afford to not know about. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbrink.